You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 18th of August 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to begin today by adding a little bit to what I was talking about yesterday with regards the protests in Belarus. Another thing that I've been thinking about whilst watching these protests is the way that they've managed to prevent there from being any violence between protesters and counter-protesters. Now, there was violence over the weekend, last weekend, and that was when these protests first started, and there was a lot of violence on the side of the protesters. Apparently, they hijacked a lorry at gunpoint. So there was violence on both sides and violence from the police. But since then, they've managed to prevent there being any violence. And the way that they've done that is by having the counter-protesters, the supporters of Lukashenko, they've been coming out in the mornings until, I think, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the protesters against Lukashenko have come out at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And both of their protests have been held in the same place, the same venue, as it were, Independence Square. But because the protests have been at different times, there's been no danger of there being any friction between the two. Now, isn't it amazing that the American state were unable to do something like that at Charlottesville? And the British state were unable to do something like that with the Protect the Monuments protest that went on just recently. And I think part of the reason for this is that the Belarusian state is a de facto ethno state, and you've got all white people there. Why would white people want to fight amongst themselves? They don't want to fight amongst themselves. So they would want to avoid the violence. So the state itself has made the simple move of just allowing the protests, but at different times. And perhaps that's something that could be suggested to our own politicians or the heads of police or whoever it is that's responsible for arranging these protests and counter-protests that we have, that they should be held at different times, not held apart at the same time, because that would avoid the violence. And just to recap on the points that we went over with Dr. Johnson last Thursday, I do recommend people listen to that podcast last Thursday if they want to find out what is going on with these protests, because it is just staggering, the lies that are being told about it. The opponent, I forget the name of the opponent, but the one that was standing against Lukashenko, he's basically a YouTuber and he only had 20,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel before the election. He has a few million now after the election, but he only had a 20,000 subscribers, not even as many subscribers as Mark Collette. And he thought he was going to beat Lukashenko in this election. And he was arrested and put in prison for crimes, not for hate speech crimes. I think Matt said last week it was for domestic violence. And if you've been sent to prison for a serious crime, then obviously you can't stand to be a politician. That's obviously part of their law. So it's now his wife that is standing to be elected. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And it's very hypocritical of Britain to condemn Belarus for doing that, because they have locked up political opponents. They locked up Paul Golding, who, whether you like it or not, is a political opponent of the government, and he was locked up for hate speech. People that question government policy on things like immigration and diversity, they get accused of hate speech, and in some cases they get locked up for it. And what you've got over there in Belarus is you've actually got a violent crime that the opponent was locked up for. So just a few points to think about there regarding the Belarus revolution. And again, another thing that I want to raise just before getting into the main topic for today is the scandal over the exam results that we have here in Britain at the moment. Because of the COVID-19 lockdown, the students haven't been able to take their exams. And that is a scandal in itself, because when you go and take exams, there's a 2-meter gap between you and anybody else, so that there's no chance of anybody being able to copy what you're writing down. There is already social distancing at exams, so I don't understand why the students weren't able to take their exams. But what has happened is the students have been given these marks, these grades, and they weren't the grades that they were expecting to get. Now, when teachers give students a predicted grade, they normally inflate that grade to get the student to work to expect that they're going to be able to succeed, so that they then work to succeed instead of thinking, well, it's not worth my bother doing this. So what the government did, they said, well, what we'll do is we'll use this algorithm as well as the predicted grade that the teacher gives. And what the algorithm does is it looks at the results that the school got the previous years and the results that the teacher got the previous years, and say that the teacher got mostly C's and the school got mostly C's over the previous years, then what the algorithm would do is make sure that all the pupils that were being marked on the system, they all got C's as well. Which is absolutely ridiculous when you think about it. Everybody is different. We have all these different IQs. You have the odd genius that pops up anywhere. Each year is going to be different. But because we have this idea that everybody is a blank slate, everybody is exactly the same, the idea that you could have an algorithm that could predict what each class, what each student is going to get from an algorithm based on last year's students, well, that would work, wouldn't it, if everybody was a blank slate? But of course, we're not a blank slate, which is the whole point of what we talk about here, is that we aren't blank slates. 80% of what makes us comes from biological inheritance. Only 20% is nurture. So to be able to say that because you can predict the nurture, you can predict what these students are going to get, it is a scandal. But again, that's what it's based on. It's based on this idea of equality, that everybody is all the same. People have been asking me what this was all about, what these complaints were about. Well, that's what it was about. It was about this algorithm. And the reason why it's failed everyone and why everybody has got lower results than they were expecting to get is because it assumed that everybody was all exactly the same in the first place. So therefore, if the teacher was a good teacher, they would have all got higher marks. And if the teacher was a bad teacher, they would have all got lower marks. But that doesn't take into account the differences that you have in the individuals. And also, because you have these multicultural classrooms, so you have a lot of kids that are going to have a low average IQ mixed in there with the kids that have a higher average IQ. Anyway, that wasn't the subject that I really wanted to get into today. Somebody dropped by the chat room yesterday, and they asked a question about the out of Africa theory. And what do I think of the out of Africa theory? And this gets talked about a lot, but I think the out of Africa theory is completely irrelevant, to be honest. Yes, there are people who say, well, life first popped up in Europe, but where does it matter where humanoids first popped up? We may be a type of humanoid, but I don't think white people first began in Africa. For a start, they say, well, the first humanoid was, or the first fossils that we have of a humanoid is somebody called Lucy. And I think that was a couple of hundred thousand years old. It may be older than that. And they discovered that in what is now known as Africa. But 200,000 years ago, the Earth didn't look the way that it does now. We can look at the continents on the Earth, and the way that they are shaped, it shows that they have broken apart. You can see that Britain broke apart from France, for instance. You can look at them all and you can fit them all together. In actual fact, you can fit them all tightly together, and some people have suggested that that shows that the Earth expanded at some point. Either it is slowly expanding with the more births that we have, or there was a cataclysmic expansion of the Earth. Because how else would you get these continents breaking apart one from another? Obviously, hundreds of thousands of years ago, the continents would have looked completely different. We may have had a completely different climate as well. So the fact that they have found these fossils there in what is now known as Africa really doesn't mean that much. But besides that, I think it's really completely irrelevant, because what we are interested in as white people is the origins of white people, not the origins of humans or humankind, because a lot of these fossils that they find, I mean, they're just ape-like creatures. They're just humanoid-type creatures. And maybe if they find a bit of stone nearby that looks like it might be a stone axe, they might say, oh, well, it was able to use tools. It was the missing link. It was the gap between animals and humans. And we have all these different types, Cro-Magnon, and I forget the names of the others, but I'm really not interested in those because they're not white men. They may have superficial similarities. They may have a certain percentage of the same DNA that we have, but they're not white men. If you want to find the origins of the white man, you have to look for the evidence of the white man. And by that, I mean evidence of civilization. So things like writing, things like metalworking, bookkeeping, sanitation, knowledge of the stars, knowledge of orienteering, navigation, all that sort of thing is what you have to look at. And all of that just sprang forth about 6,000 years ago. 7,000 years ago. In fact, today they are talking on the news. There's a news piece about the first ever signature that's been found. And it's on a clay tablet from 5,000 years ago. So 3000 BC. And the name on the tablet is Cush. And of course, the Bible tells us that Cush was one of the sons of Noah, and was the father of some of the first civilizations, were Cushite civilizations. Cush gets translated in today's Bibles as Ethiopia, because the people that originally inhabited Ethiopia were white. They were the sons of Cush. This tablet is actually found in Iraq. We also read in the Bible about the first civilization being on the plains of Shinar, and it was Babylon, and it was the Babylonian Empire. And because they were race mixing, they were all mixing together, God decided to mix the language up so that people had to speak different languages to stop them race mixing and to stop them building an empire. And that's the evidence that we have in the Bible. But there's other evidence to show this as well. If we look at these earlier civilizations, we can see that the earliest ones were in the Fertile Crescent. And there's actually L.A. Waddell, who I've talked about before on a Real Britannia podcast, the archaeologist. He discovered evidence to show that the first civilization was actually in Asia Minor, and it was in Cappadocia, in between Troy, which is where the Trojan Empire began, and Cilicia. So Asia Minor, which is now Turkey, and you had Cappadocia there. And it was known as the Hittite civilization, even though it was before the sons of Heth. But because it was Hittite later on, had these people there that were called Hittites, it was known as the Hittite civilization. I'm not sure if it still has. It was a place called Boghaz Köi back then. And what we can see is that they had temples there. They had all the trappings of civilization. And he discovered documents and records to suggest that civilization went from there to Sumer in Mesopotamia, which is the Fertile Crescent, and then built cities there. Iraq, you read about Ur in the Bible as Ur of the Chaldees, and they built a civilization there, and they colonized the Indus Valley in India and built a civilization there. That's the civilization that was in India before the Aryan invasion of India, and also spread out to Egypt and also spread to Crete. And the Crete, the Egyptian, and the Indus Valley civilization were franchises from the original Sumerian one. And that Sumerian one was the Babylonian one. Now, he also finds evidence to show that they would write songs praising their exploits. And part of their exploits were in subduing the race that was already there in Turkey. There was a savage race there that used to worship the goddess, that was involved in fertility rites, human sacrifice, all that sort of thing. And the Aryans civilized this group of people and even intermarried with this group of people. And they were very proud of what they had actually done. And this follows the cycle, basically, that went on in the past. You would get Aryan colonizers that would go to a land. They would find the aborigines in that land. They were capable of working. They were capable of doing manual labor, but not much else. And rather than just wiping these people out, they would use them as labor, and they would keep them outside of the city. And eventually, just because we are charitable people, we would try to civilize these aborigines, and eventually they would be allowed in the city and they would become citizens, and eventually intermarriage would occur. And once the intermarriage had occurred, that weakened the stock of the Aryans and they became prone to invasion. And this is actually what happened in Sumer. We had this multicultural empire there that was run by white people. We can see that from the statues with the that are depicting white people with blue eyes. And we also had these black-headed people that were there as well. And it became invaded by the Akkadians, I think. And then we had the Akkadian civilization there, who are known today as a Semite or a Semitic civilization. That doesn't mean they were like today's Jews, because, as I just pointed out, the first civilization was from Cush, and Cush's brother was Shem. He was obviously the same ethnicity, a white ethnicity, an Aryan ethnicity. So these Akkadians that took over Sumer, they were white. But of course, they fell for the same ploy, basically, of interbreeding with these other races. Now, the earliest evidence that we have for civilization is centered around the Fertile Crescent, and it's 7,000 years ago. That's the only proof we have for white people, and that's the earliest proof that we have for white people is from there. Yes, they might find a skeleton that superficially looks similar, that maybe 10,000 years old, maybe more than that, that they might find in Europe. That doesn't mean that we came from Europe any more than it means we came from the Fertile Civilization. These Aryans that were in the Fertile Crescent, they spread out from there and colonized the rest of the world because they needed resources for the civilization. And we had lots of tin, particularly in Britain. And we have the records of the Phoenician Empire, which was another white empire. But of course, it did have these non-whites in there as well. This has been the problem with empires all this time for millennia. You would have an empire that would be built and there would be non-whites that were a part of it. They would become citizens and then they would interbreed, and then the empire would collapse. But in the north, in Europe, it was too cold, really, to build big cities and civilizations. Why would you build a big civilization in the north of Europe when you could have one in the temperate zone where life was just much easier? Which is why these civilizations were first built in the Fertile Crescent. People then spread out from there, as I was saying, colonists. They go to the Baltics for amber, and they would go to Britain for tin. And the Phoenician Empire in particular were transporting tin and other metals from Britain back to Phoenicia and around that Fertile Crescent area. And we found tin from Cornwall all the way in India. I'm not sure whether it was from this Indus Valley civilization or from later. And what you had in Europe, on the coastlands of Europe, you had various settlements. But the main civilizations were the Fertile Crescent. And it wasn't up until about 400 BC that we start to see roads that are being built in places like Britain, so that we have chariots. And by the time Julius Caesar came to try and invade Britain, he was fought against by people in chariots, in the same chariots that they actually had in Troy. They'd fallen out of use in the Near East, but they hadn't fallen out of use in Britain. They were still being used in Britain. The Indus Valley civilization that was started in India, that fell to race mixing as well. And then the Indo-Aryan invasion took place, which was, I think, either 500 years or 1,000 years later. And the Indo-Aryan invasion went and subsumed this Indus Valley civilization. And for a while, they were trying to say that the Indus Valley one was actually a Dravidian civilization, which is the black Aborigine type from the south of India. But when they actually did tests on the bodies that they found there, they discovered that they were Aryan. They were slightly different to how we look today, and you would expect that after 3,000 years of selective breeding, selective adaptation of breeding with particular types, which we do. We breed with the most attractive types for whatever reasons. So there's a slight difference from the white nations today to this original Indus Valley bodies that they have found. So you can see from this that white people have lived everywhere, pretty much. I mean, we've even got evidence for around about the times of the Egyptian Empire of these Phoenicians making their way to America. We've got evidence of the Vikings making their way to America a long time before Christopher Columbus. We find that there are statues in South America that are depicting Negroes, because these Phoenicians took Negro slaves with them. And we also have records of the gods being talked about there as them being white. We see that there is red hair in some of these Pacific Islanders. And when Columbus and that era, when that era's colonizers got there, they discovered that there were these Aborigines there that actually had red hair. And the only way that they could have had red hair from ginger hair is from interbreeding with the white man from many years before. And also occasionally the blue eyes would turn up as well. These throwbacks to centuries before where there had been inbreeding with white people. We also hear about civilizations in Thailand and Cambodia that were started by the Scythians. We had Eastern and Western Scythians. They were, in actual fact, they were Saxons. Buddha was a Saxon, which is another interesting subject that people might want to look into. So this idea that because the first humanoid appeared in Africa, somehow that means we're African, or it somehow means that Africans should be allowed into Europe, it just doesn't hold up. It's really an irrelevant argument. And we can look at, as I say, we can look at these old skeletons that we find, but none of them are exactly the same as the white man. You don't find any skeletons that are exactly the same as the modern white man until the same time period that we find evidence of the white man's civilization. It's civilization that travels everywhere with us. And even to China, the Chinese civilization that was started by the white man. There are mummies in the Tarim Basin. They're called the Tokarin mummies, which is the language that they supposedly spoke, the Tokharians. And they've got salt flats there which preserve the bodies. And the earliest bodies that we have there, I think they're from 2500 BC, maybe 2000 BC. They're quite clearly Aryan, with a high standard of civilization. You can tell the high standard of civilization by the clothing that they were wearing, by the stitching that they had, by the fact that they knew how to use rennet to make cheese. They were also lactose tolerant, which is another thing that separates us from these other races, is that we use a lot of butter and milk and cheese. So they find these Aryan mummies that are there, or these Aryan burials, I should say, and they don't actually find the Mongolian type there, the Chinese type there, for another 500 to 1,000 years. Then they find this Chinese type. So this shows us that it was Aryans that were there first that started off this civilization there. We can look at North Korea, which is filled with dolmens, which are a type of megalithic structure, like two or three menhirs with a capstone on top, quite famous, almost look a bit like a singular version of Stonehenge. North Korea has more of those than anywhere else in the world. I think something like 50% of the world's dolmens are in North Korea. And they were built much later than the ones that were built in Northern Europe. I think those some of them were built 1500 BC up to about 500 BC, and it's earlier than that we find them that are built in Northern Europe. So again, that shows us that the white man was in North Korea originally, and wherever we went, we brought civilization with us. In order to actually travel to these places, we had to have a knowledge of the stars. In order to travel to the north, we had to have a knowledge of how to keep ourselves warm. We had to have a knowledge of how to save for the future, how to preserve meat. We had to be up to a certain standard of living before we could even make it into these colder climates. There is no way that we would have just evolved in a colder climate. You couldn't put a naked human being in north of Europe and expect them to survive. You could put a naked human being in the Fertile Crescent and they would be quite fine so long as they were fed. Now, I'm not saying that what the white man was ever naked. I don't think we ever walked around naked. I think we always wore clothes. In actual fact, it tells us that in the Bible, that was the first thing that was done, I think, was that the Lord God made clothes for Adam and his wife after the curse for eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which is another subject. But basically what I'm trying to show here is that this idea that man came out of Africa is completely irrelevant to the white man. And it's completely irrelevant to arguments that we should be allowing these other races into our territory. Because we can look back at every one of the previous empires and the empires from history, and it was allowing the non-whites into the city and making them into citizens and making them into equals that was the downfall of every civilization. And the reason why the European civilization is the last one standing is because the temperate, the climate in Northern Europe was too cold for these other races to exist there. The Africans couldn't get there. The sub-Saharan Negro was underneath the Sahara. He couldn't actually get into North Africa, which we colonized 2,000 years ago. The Phoenicians colonized North Africa and built Carthage. It was one of the Israelite king's nieces, Dido, that Carthage was built in honor of. But because we've now given these other races our technology, they can now make their way into Northern Europe. And the same thing is happening in Northern Europe that happened to all these previous civilizations that was the cause of these civilizations being in ruins. Wherever we look at a classical civilization today, it lies in ruins. And the people that live among the ruins are non-white. And they are the descendants of the original people that were there. And once they stopped being white, once they stopped being Aryans, they stopped being able to maintain the civilization. And you only have to look at India. And I don't mean to be insulting the Indians here, but India is one of the worst places in the world for sanitation. They go to the loo in the fields or in the streets. And yet India was one of the first places in the world to have sanitation. The Indus Valley civilization that I have spoken about, they had sanitation. They had channels coming out from the houses into other channels to take the waste away, water to take the waste away, so that they weren't fouling the streets or fouling the fields. And yet when the British Empire got there, when the British Empire got there to India, they had forgotten how to do that. How is it that a people can forget how to maintain a civilization? The only way that can happen is if they stop being the people that started that civilization in the first place. And this is the big threat that we are facing now, is that we stop becoming the people who built the civilization. We stop being who we are, because if that happens, there is no way to get it back. That is what history tells us. If there was a way for a previously white nation to become white again, then we wouldn't have any of these collapsed civilizations. We wouldn't have any of these previous civilizations in ruins, because they would have been able to get themselves back on their feet again. So that's the lesson to be learned from this. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless. And hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.